From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Another year has gone by at the United Nations, and the 74th session of that organization has drawn to a close. This is His Excellency Tijani Muhammad Bande, President of the 74th session of the UN General Assembly, speaking about the work of the previous year with the media on Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. And the first question will go to Anka, Edith Lederer, Associated Press. Please, Edie.
Mr. President, thank you so much on behalf of the United Nations Correspondents Association for doing this briefing and for meeting with us so many times during your presidency. I have two questions. Having come through this unique year in the history of the United Nations, what do you think that world leaders should be focusing on as they come to address the virtual meeting of the General Assembly in just a few weeks? And also, could you tell us about the omnibus resolution on COVID-19? What's the status? How are negotiations going? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. I think I'll be brief. I think world leaders should focus, obviously, on one, what they have always done to tell us what they see about how they relate as countries to the world, so that we are better informed about what they are thinking. This is important. But for this year, I think they should focus on strengthening the sense of solidarity and partnerships, without which we are not able, I believe, to deal not only with the pandemic, but also its fallouts. If you focus on solidarity and empathy, you are more likely to see collaborative efforts to solve common problems through the prism of respect that is key to the work of the organization. So it's not just a specific issue, but it is a framework for cooperation. The pandemic has necessitated a closer look on issues of inclusion within countries and also between countries and regions. I think this should be the focus of leaders. In addition to whatever else they will bring from their perspective as local issues or national issues. Thank you. The omnibus resolution is still being negotiated, and I am confident that we'll close this by the end of this session, which is in a few days' time. A lot of work has been done by the co-facilitators, the permanent representatives of Afghanistan and Croatia. They have had a lot of meetings to try to get everyone on board on the important questions to allow us to have something focused on COVID and the fallout of COVID. I am confident that before the end of the presidency, we'll have the resolution passed, I believe, by a consensus. It was hard work for the members, but in particular for the leadership of the co-facilitators. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question from Pamela Falk, CBS.
Thank you, Reem, and thank you, Mr. President, for the briefings during the year. It's Pamela Falk from CBS News. I'm following up on the bigger picture question that Edie asked, and that is, this UNGA is going to be mostly virtual, and one of the purposes of the General Assembly is to get everyone in New York. Can you explain the importance, even virtual, of the UN General Assembly, and mainly because and include the fact that trending on Twitter right now is defund the UN? Explain why it's important as an institution. Thank you so much. Big picture question.
Thank you very much. I think coming to New York each year by the heads of state and government is important to send a message of the possibility of promise and the importance of world leaders coming together as important partners, as equals, to discuss problems of the world and to thereby begin to address them. And this year, this will happen in that the most delegations will be led by heads of state and government from afar. And statements can be read by permanent representatives because it's not a fully virtual meeting, because it was a hybrid meeting. What is lost, I can say, is the normal banter and give and take and bilateral meetings that have been an important feature of United Nations General Assembly, wherein a head of state can have a meeting with peers, maybe 10, 15, even 20, that would otherwise not have been possible if not for the fact that the platform of the UN has brought them here. I think I do not know of a concerted effort to defund the UN, frankly, but I do know a lot of people have raised a valid question which has been addressed, which is to get the United Nations to focus on value for money and to be more transparent and to reform. I think these are valid demands of the global community that we serve. And in response to that, there have been ongoing reforms in the Secretariat, which is in this particular case key in terms of delivery of what has been agreed to. There have been also efforts to have the General Assembly also work better in terms of how it works and what it should do. There have been efforts that we are still witnessing relating to conversations that have not gone to the extent people have wished for. This is the issue of reform of the council. Again, it's not an issue of the glass being half full or half empty. I think it's that there have been valid questions for the United Nations, like all other organizations, to do better. And I think this is absolutely important. And I get the point you are making. But I don't know of a concerted effort to defund the UN, frankly. And I do follow the news. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Not my point. I just wanted to ask about the general point. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we have Abdel Hamid from Al-Quds Al-Arabi.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Hello? I cannot unmute myself. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Reem. Thank you, Mr. President. It was a pleasure working with you and seeing you often this during this 74th session. My question, Mr. President, about also the big picture. There are so many countries now don't believe in multilateralism. There's so much violation of international law. There is so much of the Security Council to address global crises. like the case in Libya, Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and others. And we have seen some countries also turning their back to international law, like India decided to annex Kashmir. Myanmar is continuing with its massacres of Muslims there, Rohingya Muslims. China is also abusing their Muslim population. Where is the world going, sir? How do you see the United Nations? If there is no respect to international law, if big countries like the U.S. decide to grant the Golan Heights to the Israelis and to issue this bargain of century, which annihilate the question of Palestine and their rights, and yet the U.N., the voice of the U.N. was muted, especially the G.A., which represent the world more than the Security Council. So how do you see the world in the following few years if this trend continues? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much indeed. I think two questions. One, of course, is respect for international law. I think the United Nations have been very clear about the necessity to do so. The United Nations, as the United Nations, is a member state based organization, and it operates on the basis of what they're able to do together. This constitutes some of the difficulties. I will address the meaning of that. But to say this, the United Nations, and I can speak from what I have heard the LG state, I've also tell you what the UNGA presidency at 74th session has stated, has always been clear in relation to any issue to do with shifting of borders without recourse to international law. I think this has been very clear because these are resolutions of the Assembly that we have reaffirmed. I think the UN has not been silent on this issue, but the UN doesn't have the police. It has only moral authority to urge others to work collaboratively to respect law and to get out of action that can continue to threaten international peace. I think this much is very clear if you follow what discussions have taken place in relation to each of the issues. The United Nations have been very clear concerning what constitutes valid change of borders, and there has been no case of the UN saying otherwise. Rather, what you address is the issue of difficulties, and I think your point is well taken, especially when countries that are extremely important to the health and security of the world at times behave more nationalistically. However, I think this is not to put us to the point to say that we have abandoned the forum. We have not abandoned the forum. And I can imagine if we had abandoned the forum, the amount of chaos that we have already would have seen that is far beyond our worst fears. I think what we have to do is to continue to work even harder to insist on what is right and to have coalitions that continue to push together so that no country, big or small, will think there are no consequences to define the rest of the membership. I think that's what is happening. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question from Carrie Newton, Le Monde, RFE.
Thank you, Reem. Thank you, Mr. President, for the work done during this 76th session. It's a small picture question, but which can have a big impact on the GA and on the organization of UNGA. Do you have any updates about head of states wanting to attend UNGA in person? And if nobody has confirmed yet, when would be the last notification needed to be made to the GA for logistical purposes?
Well, I do not know how many, if any, head of state or head of government will attend the UNGA. But it is the right of countries to decide level of participation in person. If they do, the same protocols in terms of social distancing, the time allocated for speeches are given. So this is, no country is debarred, but each country knows that the rules of the city and the rules of the host government must be obeyed. And it is their decision how they take this. At this moment, I have really no knowledge. I don't have any information concerning who or if any person at the level of head of state or government is coming. But if there is, the rules apply as they apply to all others. Thank you.
And we'll go to Richard Roth, CNN. Richard? Okay, so maybe he has a technical difficulty. We'll come back to Richard after Toby Burns, NHK, Japan Broadcasting Corp.
Thank you very much. First question is a clarification, which is just how many resolutions have been passed during lockdown? And the second question, more broadly speaking, is how does this level of productivity compare with your expectations, given the constraints of what you had to go through during lockdown? Are you pleased with what the GA has accomplished during this time? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's difficult to have a scientific response to the issue of productivity, but my sense of the matter is that we have been able to, through virtual meetings, to have, in some cases, more people participating in discussions, at least of informal processes, than perhaps would have been the case. But on some of the issues that required, by tradition, in-person negotiations, we had to shift others. For example, the intergovernmental negotiations on reform of the council could only go so far because of the requirement of delegations to have in-person meetings. The conversations concerning dealing with review relating to countering terrorism also required in-person meetings. That had to be shifted to the next session. But to your point, 70 decisions and resolutions in total were adopted during this period. They often were mandated events, and it required a lot of work to get them done through negotiations that were not in person and through silence procedure. I take, for example, just an example, the declaration for the 75th, celebrating the 75th anniversary was it's a very important one, and it took a lot of effort for the membership, divided that it appeared, to really come together to say this is an important moment, and really important work had to be done by all delegations to get us that approval. So yes, the expectation for some processes would have been better met if we had in-person meetings. But by and large, a lot was achieved, far more than was initially expected, because when the lockdown started, there was panic. But once we made a decision that the work of the assembly had to continue, then we found means to do what we could do. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll go back to Richard Roth. Maybe he has some technical difficulties, but we'll try again. Richard? Okay. So he said that he will send the question, the written question. Okay. Yes, he said, what is your opinion, Mr. President, of the effectiveness of recorded tape speeches without a live audience?
Well, I think it is the whole question that all of us had to deal with. We are debating in New York how to safely get students back to school. and nothing is like it had been. And obviously we are used to a mode of delivery. That wasn't possible. But we had to continue to deliver the best we can, and that is continuing. So what exactly is a taped message? It's a message that somebody cannot deliver personally, but it is his message or her message. And what is important is that in the message, we find the person's understanding of global events and even solutions to them. This is what we're able to do. The other option will be permanent representatives of those countries can deliver the message personally. But what obviously we said in an earlier question, an answer to an earlier question, is that the give and take of delegations also meeting bilaterally to deal with issues, I think that has not been, that has been lost in some way. So, and the vibrancy of in-person meetings around the assembly, around New York, obviously that is also missed. But the option not to have what we could do was not something we considered. We just had to do something, and that's what we can do. And I think, I'm sure that when Ambassador Bozkir takes over, you'll see activity around continuation of in-person where possible, and progressively as the situation improves, other things that will happen as mandated for the 75th session will be in person, and the vibrancy will continue to improve as the situation allows. Thank you.
And we'll turn now to Kenji Yamaguchi from Kyodo News.
Thank you, Reem, and thank you, President. I have a question on the nuclear ban treaty. Now the treaty needs only 6 ratifications to go into effect. What do you expect this treaty to perform once it goes into effect? And what do you want the nuclear states to do to achieve the world without nuclear weapons? Thank you.
We couldn't, the voice was not that clear, Kenji. If you can repeat it slowly or maybe write it down, we'll try one more time with audio. Would you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, now the treaty, nuclear ban treaty, needs only 6 ratifications to go into effect. What do you expect this treaty to perform once it goes into effect? And what do you want the nuclear states to do to achieve the world without nuclear weapons? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think many states, as you know, are signing onto the issue of total ban on nuclear weapons. But we have not yet achieved the number required for it to come into force. A lot of work is going into this. The commitment of the membership is to really a nuclear weapons-free world. From the very beginning, this is the object. There are different planks to how to get there. For now, there is worry over whether in some respects some states are not sharpening their weapons. But be that as it may, as an issue, the global community is still united in the continued search for a weapons, nuclear weapons-free world, and indeed the larger picture of a world without weapons of mass destruction. Now, when nuclear states, that is their question, what will they do? Well, obviously it is our hope that because they are members of the same global community, that they see the importance of working with others to guarantee peace and security, and the removal of such weapons is one element of how that is to be done. It's not an easy subject, but it is the goal of the assembly. Thank you.
And we'll go to Iftikhar Ali, AP of Pakistan.
Thank you, Reem, and thank you, Mr. President. My question was asked by my colleague, Abdul Hamid, but since in connection with the big picture, but since I have the floor, I will ask you a different question. Now that you have completed your presidency of the 74th session of the General Assembly, and you did it well and through innovation, what are your future plans now? Or what are your plans for the future?
Well, it's a difficult question to ask to answer, but I will say that I plan in whatever location to continue to advocate for the values of the UN. I will continue to advocate the values of the UN, and for the foreseeable future, I will still be in New York as ambassador and permanent representative of Nigeria to the United Nations. As a person, obviously, I'll continue to learn from the interactions I've had as OPGA and to use in whatever way possible that experience to advance the goals of the United Nations. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We have an email. We have a question on the email from Harrison Arubo, Nan, news agency of Nigeria. He says, what would the president say is his most remarkable achievement as president of the 74th session of the General Assembly so far?
Again, it's an unfair question. A lot of things. First of all, it's not an individual achievement. Let me be very clear. It's something we have achieved as an office with the support of member states and the organization as a whole. But I think I'm glad to have worked really hard to lessen disagreement and to push as much as possible towards people coming to the center so that we can agree decisions and resolutions, especially in the context not only of COVID, but also worrisome disputes involving major powers. I think this is important, that we continue to project that despite differences, there is a global community of which we are all a part. I think this was really our major concern, and we tried to always live up to this ethos that we must work together and try to reduce differences, and also where there are really dangerous trends, we also talk truthfully about the need to come to the middle. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I don't see any other questions. Okay, and we have visitors here in the press briefing room. Dulce.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of things. Given the GA format, basically audios, videos, how can the world get excited about this General Assembly? What do you tell them? Why they should even pay attention or listen?
Thank you very much indeed. I think it's simply to remind PRs of our connections and our responsibility. Each member state or each representative at the same time represents his or her country, but also is part of the assembly. And to say that if we refuse to be responsive to the moment, which is a difficult moment, then we confirm the cynicism that you find in some writings that the United Nations is not connected to the needs of the world. And I think it is simply to continue to remind, because people know this.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.